PushLiving.com presents the Wheelchair Accessible Lifestyle Podcast, pushing the boundaries of disability-inclusive design, travel, and lifestyle. Here, you'll find stories of triumph, courage, and clarity. You'll discover you're not alone and hear from inspirational guests from the disability community and beyond. You'll get fresh reviews of the best inclusive travel locations and fabulous products to help make your life more functional, healthy, and fun. We will intrigue, enlighten, and encourage you to live your best life on wheels. Whether you're a wheelchair entrepreneur, a stay-at-home mom or dad, or newly disabled, you will love the advice and ideas we share to help you learn, grow, and push your own boundaries. Now, let's roll.
And good afternoon. This is Deborah Davis, and I am your host for the PushLiving.com website. This is our episode number one of our podcast. And we are so excited because I have been hearing about the gentleman that I'm going to be interviewing today for some time. I was introduced to him via his website from a friend of mine named Steven, who is also a wheelchair user. He lived in New York and went out to California, where Sam resides now, and told me I should definitely talk to this guy because he's somebody I should be interviewing. So I am happy to be able to do this rather on a podcast versus an article, so you can just get to know him and his very sexy voice. Speaking of which, one of the first times I've ever heard of Sam was on a podcast about sex. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. It was absolutely fascinating. And Steven sent it to me and I listened to the whole entire thing and I thought, oh my gosh, every person should be listening to this guy speak.
Thank you.
And every able-bodied man should be listening to this guy speak as well. We do use something called disabled first language. So for those of you who are not familiar with it and you're insulted because we say disabled woman or disabled person, you can look that up. It's called Disabled Say the Word, and you can learn a little bit about that whole style. Okay, Sam, how you have been a wheeler since 1999. I understand.
1999, that's right. Yeah.
Drunk driver caused you to become a paraplegic.
And
you developed the Zen warrior style coaching practice, which the concept is to optimize your mind body. So your philosophy, and I want to ask you a little bit about this, but I first want to let our readers know what it is. Your philosophy is that each obstacle in our life is an opportunity to grow stronger and more resilient as human beings, and thus contribute in a more powerful way to the betterment of themselves and the world.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit about how your Zen warrior training is different from other personal development coaches.
Well, it's deeply steeped in Zen philosophy, for one thing, which I find is such an extraordinary philosophy. It's basically just saying things are as they are. And that sounds so simple, and yet it's so challenging for people to actually be able to embrace that simple truth. The human tendency is to constantly be going back and forth between, oh, if things were only this way, or I wish things were the way they were in the past, or I hope for a better future, or whatever, and all the while missing out on how extraordinary the present moment actually is when you just say, hey, things are as they are. If I embrace things exactly as they are and see that life is a blessing all the time, that there is never anything that happens to me that I don't on some level allow to happen to me, then you open up to a much different experience of the world than the experience of judgment that comes so commonly to people. And it happens to me as well. It's a human tendency to leave the present moment and sort of wish for something else. So I'm on the path of the Zen warrior myself. It's a never-ending path. It's a path that I will still be practicing the day I die. And so that's how it's different. It's just, it's opening up people to the experience of now being the only moment that ever matters, and that things are exactly as they are. And if you embrace life with that type of attitude and mentality, and then take initiative in your life from that perspective, that's the warrior part. Disciplined initiative and optimizing your mind and body to function better and better from that perspective of things being the way they are. And so that's the essence of Zen warrior training.
I absolutely love that. And it's something that it's ironic because as people with disabilities, we're having to overcome challenges every single day. And when we see people around us who don't have the same physical challenges, but are dealing with either self-doubt or judgment or, self-esteem issues, and they're trying to overcome it and they're negative and, everything around them is bothering them and they're angry. They're angry about politics or angry about the weather. You know, the lady in front of them who didn't drive the correct way. It can get a little frustrating when in our community, we're dealing with real issues.
Totally.
So what is the percentage of the customers that you work with? Are most of them people who don't have physical disabilities?
Yeah, I actually currently don't have any clients who have any specific physical disability. Everyone that I'm working with at the moment, they're all able-bodied people. I really think, and I think you would probably agree, that people with disabilities actually have something very special to share with the able-bodied community because of the degree of the challenge that we've experienced. And that's part of why I started Zen Warrior Training. Was I saw people like you were describing, getting frustrated in traffic or, mm-hmm. Stubbing their toe or or breaking up with a partner or whatever, and having it totally throw them off and becoming far more paralyzed in life than I was. And so I thought, wow, it's actually because of the degree of challenge that I've experienced as a result of my disability that I know how to make it through this type of thing. Like, I actually wouldn't get, and it's not that I'm superhuman. I'm still human, but I still get thrown off when things that I don't like happen to me. But that being said, there's so much practice that people with disabilities have around resilience. And it's just absolutely necessary for us in every moment. We don't get a back door. There's no way of breaking up with our disability or leaving our disability like a job that you want to leave or something like that. You can't actually avoid dealing with the fact that ultimately you're dealing with yourself. And as a result of all that practice, it makes us experts in resiliency. And therefore, I feel we have a, if not a responsibility, at least an opportunity to be able to create massive change in able-bodied people's lives because we've become specialists in this department.
I have never heard it said that way before, and I love it. I mean, obviously, we get a lot of the term inspiration porn, which for those in our audience who may not understand what that means, it was first coined by Stella Young of Australia. Have you heard about Stella, Sam?
I have not, no.
Oh, well, she's an Australian comedian.
You know what? I have.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
she passed away, but she had an amazing TED Talk that
just
floored everyone.
That's right, right.
And it said, I'm not your inspiration and that I don't want to be your inspiration purely because I have a disability. But it makes her feel uncomfortable. It makes her feel mm-hmm. objectified. And mm-hmm. but the way you're explaining it is a little different in that those of us who have, I know a lot of people with disabilities who aren't Sam Morris's in the world, who aren't mm-hmm. out there with their own businesses and making things happen, who are still mm-hmm. feeling sorry for themselves and are depressed. Mm-hmm. And for those who might be listening who are like that, mm-hmm. And maybe they can't really afford right now the situation where they can have a personal coach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What would you advise to them to the first steps that they would need to take?
That's a great question. My advice is to begin to look every day, set aside some time every day that you can look at your life and look at the things that you have overcome.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the things that you have learned as a result of what you have overcome. I mean, you might still be feeling like, why the heck did this happen to me? And feel overwhelmed by the amount of challenge that you experience on a daily basis. And believe me, I've been there. But it was through starting to discipline my mind every day to look at the things that I was doing that were really working, things that I was doing that were basically embracing my own hero's journey is what it came down to. Like looking at, wow, you know, that's pretty impressive that I managed to get through that, you know, incontinent situation, or that's pretty impressive that I managed to, you know, find a way of satisfying my partner despite my lack of sexual function, or or whatever it is, allowing myself to really take a look from a sort of an objective standpoint at the challenges that I'd overcome, and starting to do that on a regular basis. So my recommendation is that you start by just setting aside some time every day to either journal or meditate on the things that you're doing that are amazing. And just start to really train your mind to see your life in that perspective. So you just start going, wow, I really am empowered. And it takes a while to move out, to move beyond. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to happen even in weeks or months. Like, I just do this as a discipline now. And because I do this with my own clients now, I'm constantly doing it myself. And life will always throw you new challenges. It's not like the disability too is sort of the end all be all, and then it's over and you never have challenges again. There's more challenges. We experience all the same challenges that the able-bodied community does as well. So that's even more of a reason why it's so important to spend some time every day just really reinforcing the things that you're doing that are just really extraordinary.
I love that. And it's kind of reminds me, it's a different approach to the gratitude journal. Rather than saying, oh, I'm happy because I have this and this and this, the five things that, you know, you're supposed to write down in your journal every day to refocus your mind on the things that are going well. I love that. And I don't actually write it down, but sometimes I'll just lay in bed at night and I'll just say it out loud or in a prayer. You know, I'm really grateful for this and this and this. And it has really been beneficial to me. But your way of thinking is different, where thinking about, look what I have done today, all the things I've achieved, and building on that and building that strength and that self, you know.
Exactly. I think it's sometimes a little bit hard to conjure. You can't really conjure up gratitude. It's like, I know people who have gratitude practices, and it's kind of like, and I do have a gratitude practice as well, but it's kind of hard to conjure gratitude when you truly still feel swamped by the challenge that you're experiencing.
Yes.
It's like, where do I start? What? I'm grateful for what? Like, that just feels like a big lie. So if instead you start with, well, what am I doing that's actually working? Like, what am I doing that is, that's reframing it in a way where you don't have to conjure up anything. You can just see what's functional in your life.
Do you find that most of your clients are coming to you because of the personal, or should I say personal development? When I say personal development, there's many aspects. There's people go because they want to be more spiritually connected and do the Zen, Buddha, you know, whatever their spirituality is, they want to improve on that. Then there's the whole health and discipline. And then there's personal coaches for business and business success. And of course, there's relationships. You know, obviously, I want to go to a coach because I want to be a better man for my wife, or vice versa. What do you find out in California are your primary requests for assistance, or are they all of the above?
They are really all of the above. They're really all over the map. I tend to work with people who are in the midst of some type of transformation. And I've worked with couples who are working on developing a more empowered relationship with each other. I've also worked with people on the other end of the spectrum who are experiencing divorce and want to be able to transition through the divorce in a way where they can be as functional as possible. I work with people who are developing their businesses to be able to help them ground into themselves and stay centered and stay focused as they develop their business, so their business doesn't take them away, but instead they operate their business from a state of being calm and centered and still very ambitious at the same time.
Yes.
So it's really all across the map, and everyone has a unique challenge that they're experiencing, and there are commonalities to every challenge. And that's part of what I love about the Zen work, is that I can really identify common principles that no matter what you're going through, apply. They apply to your life, and they can make the difference between going crazy and feeling totally empowered.
That makes so much sense. I mean, you know, when you're trying to run a business, for example, or you're trying to deal with challenges of a divorce or a disability, it can be so overwhelming, and the self-doubt and the lack of focus can really, you know, drag you down. And then, you know, sometimes you can just be so busy and so have so much to do that you feel like you never get it done. And
yes.
One of the things you talk about
yes.
in your, actually I saw it on your Facebook page, so if anybody wants to follow Sam, what is your Facebook page official name, Sam?
Facebook.com/Zen Warrior Training.
Same thing as your website.
Yeah.
You talk about the sweet spot, and that the Zen warriors will find that sweet spot between being and doing.
That's right.
So, you know, grounding in to find your focus sounds so appealing to me, and I'm sure it must to many of our readers. Talk to us a little bit about that and how you can help. And again, it doesn't have to be somebody who has a business who is working on that. It could be someone going to school or raising a family, but the sweet spot between always frantically busy and overwhelmed.
Totally.
And just being.
Totally. Yeah. So it comes back to a daily practice as well of actually embodying yourself, really being in a state where you are not just coming from your thoughts about what needs to get done. Mm-hmm. The beauty of Zen and meditation and this whole approach is that it's really about grounding into your whole body. And what I mean by that is feeling in your physical body, your energetic body, feeling in your spiritual body, and using your thoughts to be able to guide you in the direction that you want to go in, rather than letting your thoughts take you over and decide what direction you quote unquote should go in.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that tends to be the crux of the problem with people who are getting overwhelmed, is their thoughts are actually guiding their behavior. And their feelings are guiding their behavior. So they feel something that they don't like, and then their thoughts respond to it, and they kind of react to that feeling, and then they go and do some action that is related to that feeling that they didn't like, and then they've acted on a feeling that they didn't really process. And it ends up being a perpetual cycle of feelings and associated thoughts that creates that state of overwhelm that is so common. And if you have a practice of bringing yourself back into your physical and energetic body on a regular basis and just grounding, just feeling yourself present, then you can learn to direct yourself from that state. Then you look at, oh, okay, so I'm having a feeling about something. Okay, well, what do I want to do about that feeling? And now I don't have to react to that feeling. I've actually got a choice. Maybe the best thing for me to do is just let that feeling process through my body. Maybe the best thing to do is breathe more. maybe the best thing to do is to just let myself ground into the earth more. Now, what is it that needs to be done that is an effective and functional response to a feeling rather than being in perpetual reaction to feelings? And ultimately, you live life far in a far more healthy manner, and you end up getting way more accomplished because you're not always chasing you're not like our hamster chasing around on the hamster wheel. You're directing your focus all the time, like, oh, I want that. Okay, I'm going to go for that. Now, then you're able to work from a state of intentions and a state of being aware of your goals, which is really grounded in who you are, rather than being constantly redirected by your thoughts and feelings that are not in alignment with your direction.
Or your best interest.
Or your best interest, exactly.
I mean, so often people make decisions, and I see it, you know, now that, you know, social media is so popular, I see so many people who post things that you can see that they have a feeling something happened and they post about it immediately, and it's self-defeating and it's actually self-destructive.
It really is.
I watch sometimes people spiraling down. And I mean, I'm talking about people in our own disability community who are spiraling downward and trying to grasp at things that aren't really the best practices or the best thing for them, when if they just did what you just said and got focused and grounded and thought about what to just being productive and doing things that are actually healthy for them, whether it be eating the right food or, you know, doing activities that are actually going to promote their health in any possible way, like business, work, school. And instead of just trying to reach out for a person or people to redefine who they are and make them feel better about themselves. So how do you, you know, a lot of this is coming from the self-conscious mind. Is that not correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah. From being self-aware, being aware of your entire self, not just your thoughts. So what that really involves, and one of the beauties of meditation in my experience, is that it helps you to detach from your thoughts and from your feelings so that you're not getting carried away by them.
Is that what you would call an ego as well? Getting detached from the ego?
Yeah, the ego is roughly defined as a false self, mm-hmm. a notion of the self that's actually not really grounded in reality. It's a notion of the self that is based on an image of your identity, what you want to portray to yourself and to the world that is not actually fully in alignment with who you are. It's like an idea. The ego is this constant idea that people tend to, a lot of people will just go with that idea for their entire life.
Yes.
And they'll let that idea run their whole lives
of what they should be
or mm-hmm. what they think they want to be. A lot of the underlying emotion associated with that is fear, a fear that if they don't look a certain way to people that they will, you know, it will crush them or whatever. One of the beauties of a disability is the humility that one experiences. Like, wow, it's like impossible practically. I mean, I do know a few people with egos with disabilities, but it's pretty hard to conjure up an ego after that type of humbling experience of having a disability. So yeah, it's about watching the thoughts and the feelings that are associated with ideas about who we are or what we need to be doing or the to-do list. You know, a lot of us are just, maybe people aren't operating from the level of ego identity, but there's a constant stream of to-dos that are moving through the mind. And it's like, oh, unless I pick up the laundry now and then do this then and da 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 da, and I got to go and pick up my kid at soccer practice or whatever. And mm-hmm. it's like this constant flow of to-dos that never ceases. Mm-hmm. And that can be really distracting. Really, really distracting to constantly be hearing a to-do list pouring through your mind.
And it's not really, that's exactly what you mean by being versus doing, because you're not really living your life and enjoying your life if you're constantly frantically running around trying to get things done. You're not being.
No. And you can do plenty from a state of being as well. So it's not like if you're experiencing yourself simply being when you're in meditation, like you're wasting your time or anything like that. In fact, it's one of the most productive things that you can do with your time, because when you do go to do the things that need to be done, you do them with a peaceful mind rather than with an erratic awareness where you're constantly thinking about the next thing that needs to be done. So those things get done either way. It's not like you check out when you are practicing being in a state of being. In fact, those things get done and then more gets done because you're doing them more efficiently and you're more self-aware and you're less scatterbrained as you're doing them.
You're more grounded,
exactly.
More focused. You know, I one thing that really helped change my life, and I try to tell others about it, because when you're working and you're doing all these things, you don't take the time out to meditate or to do fitness. And I was reading an article that said, no, just take the time away from your day and make sure you get 20 to 30 minutes of fitness in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, I really don't have time to do this, but I'm going to stop everything. And for us to do fitness, it's a big deal. It's actually an hour and a half, because by the time you get the proper clothing on, you get everything set up, whether it's getting on a hand cycle or getting in a pool, getting in a lift. I mean, it's not like as fast just to go to a gym and work out for an able-bodied person.
Sure, sure.
So, for me, then I have to shower after the pool, and then I have to dry my hair again. It's like a whole process being a girl on top of being disabled. You add another half hour onto that. But, you know, it really does significantly change the focus, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. I felt much more creative, much more clarity, just from having that time of just doing nothing but physical activity. And whatever it is you can do, it could be yoga. And like you said, meditation. So in your practice, seems like meditation is a big part of it. Is it something that you recommend everyone do?
You know, I can't see any downsides of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was an interesting article that came out, and I'm trying to remember what it was, New York Times maybe a few months ago. And I remember it talking about the dark side of meditation. And
wow.
I thought, well, that's interesting.
Very.
And it was talking about how with mindfulness practices, sometimes people end up finding that they end up experiencing more depression or more anxiety rather than less, and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that could potentially be the case if your system is so used to operating on overdrive all the time or something like that, and then you begin to see that your patterns for overdrive are actually not grounded in anything that you even want in your life. And then it makes you question, you know, because it does bring up a lot of questions. When you begin a meditation practice, a self-awareness practice, you have to get into it knowing that you're questioning your very existence. You're going deep, basically. If you really commit to it, you're going deep and you're going into a state of basically, you know, if you want to find out the root of all of this stuff, you have to be willing to allow thoughts and feelings, the full spectrum of thoughts and feelings, to move through your system and simply work on a regular basis at detaching yourself from them. And a lot of the thoughts and feelings that underlie a lot of the behaviors that are so common in this world come from a place of being very, very ungrounded and a lot of deep emotional wounds.
Right.
And so one has to go in with it with that awareness. And with that caveat, I think that there's nothing more extraordinary than that adventure. Yet at the same time, I also would understand that with that comes, you just really have to be willing to get to know yourself very deeply. And you might find things about yourself that you have been hiding for a long time that you really don't want to have to address, that, you know, consciously you might be able to override that stuff by the behaviors that you're used to experiencing. But yeah, it's something to go into with a really serious commitment to yourself, knowing that you're going to have to face basically everything that you've ever created.
It's amazing. And it sounds like it can be very disruptive, because what if you were on a certain path because you were raised in a certain family and you had certain expectations and you had pressure? I find that a lot of people who have lower self-esteem seem to be very ambitious because they're trying to make up for the fact that they don't feel necessarily good about themselves. So they're trying to achieve these outward things. Meditation practice, well, I can see that could be very disruptive. Let's say you have, you know, a whole life built around this particular personality aspect of trying to overcompensate for, you know, it could be in a childhood where you were abused or you were never made to feel good about who you were. So you overachieved and you became this very successful, wealthy person. And then all of a sudden you go to Sam and Sam helps you really ground into yourself. You realize, you know what? I have to fix all this. I really don't want the car and the airplane and the automobile and the fancy house. As a matter of fact, I don't really want that wife anymore. she really is not deeply fulfilling to me as a human being. And going through that process, I can imagine it could cause some major trauma in and of itself.
Yeah. You have to really be committed to finding your truth. And I set everyone up that I work with that you have to be committed to finding your truth. And that, you know, basically what I'm offering is techniques and training to be able to take this journey for yourself. And then my own mirror of reflection from my own experience of having gone through this journey and from everything that I have ever learned from the wisdom that I have studied, and it's really important to get both sides, that ultimately there is a lot of freedom and self-awareness to be gained. And in my experience, that freedom and self-awareness is invaluable. And in my opinion, all roads lead to that direction. Now, whether they will actually lead to that direction in this lifetime or another lifetime is all dependent on what the individual is prepared for.
So you must see talking about what we just mentioned, you must see incredible change occurring in people. Can you tell us a little bit about how that must feel for you as an individual and your own growth, seeing people go through these transformations?
It feels amazing. It really helps me to feel so much of a sense of purpose in my life, a sense of valuing everything that I've been through, where I look at the past 16 and a half, close to 17 years since my injury happened. And I now look at that time with everything that I've been through. Not only was there the injury, but I've also spent over 2 years lying flat on my back in hospital beds due to pressure sores. I've had both my femurs broken. I've had the gamut. I've been on the full ride. And but it makes me look at that time period with gratitude, with genuine gratitude, because every moment of those experiences created who I am today. And those experiences now have so much value for myself and for my ability to serve others. And I can feel it through every cell of my body as I work with people, that all of those experiences have extraordinary value.
So how long does it take? Say someone starts working with you. Well, first of all, are there some clients who just aren't capable of change? If you're changing human behavior, which is, psychologists have been trying to do it for years, and some people just don't have the belief in the systems, or they don't have the discipline to do what needs to be done, or maybe they just don't hurt enough yet in order to make those changes.
All of those things are true. And I would actually say that most people are somewhat incapable of making changes. And I don't say that in any kind of judgmental way. I just say that in a way where I see what people have the desire and the capacity to do. And there's a certain type of person who's lining up at my door. And then there's most people who aren't, basically, because real change, real substantial change takes a while. It takes a real lot of commitment, and it takes an investment in yourself, and it takes consistency.
Yes.
And those who want it, I think what you were saying about the feeling of pain is really spot on. There's this feeling of, man, I just can't live with myself the way that I've been living with myself, and I need something, and I know that there's something beyond my own present experience. And so I'm willing to invest and commit in myself to find my own sense of freedom.
Right.
And that's a somewhat rare person. It's not totally rare. I think there are people who want it. They want freedom. They want self-awareness on the one hand, but then actually committing to that type of transformation is a whole other deal.
Well, it's any transformation, whether it be health or fitness or, you know, diet. I mean, self-destructive behaviors in general. I mean, and behaviors are another self-destructive behavior that people have. So mm-hmm. if they won't go and try to get healthy, it really all goes back down to well, you tell me, but I'm assuming that someone who's eating to the point where they know they're going to hurt themselves, or they're smoking, you know, cigarettes, or, mm-hmm. you know, just mm-hmm. not doing anything to do self-care. And that mm-hmm. includes self-development, the type of program you have. If they don't care enough about themselves, why would they come to you? I mean, how do we help them to?
Well, it's that there's that it actually does come with a certain amount of care, self-care that creates the initiative to come to me. Like, you actually have to really deep down care to get through whatever it is that is creating your own paralysis in your life to even want to come to me. So there's that. Otherwise, we're both wasting our time. Exactly. Like, it's really not a good fit. So it takes someone going, yeah,
that's really 22, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a certain need for self-value
right.
that is inherent in someone who would be a good fit for working with me, or, you know, or like you said, for anything for that matter, for fitness, for health, for all of the, for nutrition, all of these different things that are aspects of personal development, all of which I touch on and work with Zen Warrior Training, but also have their own categories to be able to get into, to commit to any one of those areas, to improving your health or improving your vitality or getting more fit or developing more self-awareness. It really does require a sense of value that
yes.
you have, that you have value, that
yes.
you ultimately deserve to be living a better life than the one that you're living, and that you know that that's possible. You just don't quite have the tools to be able to
yes.
do so.
That's it. I mean, they have, because so many people can want that for them, and you could see them, and you could be, you know, I mean, it's everybody in their family has somebody in their family who they want to help when they see that they need someone like Sam Morris in their lives. But if those people aren't at the place where they're ready to do it, it's sad, because like you said, it's a catch 22. Self-value, self-awareness, you know, willing to risk, you know, what could occur when they do go deep. Sometimes people
yeah.
must be afraid of that, right?
Sure. And one of the things that I was just thinking of when you were saying their families might want it for them and that kind of thing, there's a challenge that a lot of people have with the way that their families want things for them, where if the family really wants something for someone and then they communicate it in a way that doesn't really reach the person, it can create more harm than good.
Okay.
Because it's basically saying, look, something's wrong with you.
Yes.
And then that just reinforces all of the feelings of something being wrong.
Wow.
And then they already have all of these feelings about something being wrong with them. And now their family's saying it too. Now their spouse is saying it too. Now their friends are saying it too. Look, you got to do this because da, 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 da. So that can actually be really damaging for people to hear that message and feel that that's what people think about them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really hard for a lot of people to be able to differentiate their own value when they feel these types of judgments coming from people who genuinely want the best for them, right. but they're communicating it wrong. They're communicating it in a way that is not effective. And so the people who are trying to help those people, if there's any listeners out there today who are trying to help someone to find their power, to find their ability to become more self-aware, to become more fit, to take better care of themselves, you have to be really conscientious about the way in which you deliver that message and really be clear that if you're communicating that something is wrong with them and that there's a problem in their behavior, then you might be triggering more of that.
That is one of the most important things I've heard. And I'm sure many of our readers are going to be people who may not be the people with disabilities themselves, or maybe the person with a disability who's living a push living lifestyle that has a wife or child who needs help and they're going about it all wrong. So right. it may not be going to Sam Morris, you know, for help with your own life, but a combination of your own life and helping those around you, whether it be your children, your mother, you know. I love that. I have a daughter who's 22 who told me about a book called Nonviolent Communication. Have you ever heard of that concept?
Yes.
Can you just touch on that a little bit? Is that something that you teach in your practice as well?
Well, I actually haven't studied nonviolent communication, but I do on a regular basis study the art of communication and practice the art of communication in such a way where I'm actively working on seeing how well my communication is being received by someone else and then studying what it is about my delivery that works and what it is about my delivery that doesn't work. And there is usually a combination of the two happening at any given time. And from what I've noticed, what I've really experienced with people is that there's an intention of communicating something clearly, and yet the intention gets lost in the mix a lot of the time by the way it's being communicated. And oftentimes that's as a result of judgment that is being throwing off the communication.
Yes.
Basically, someone is coming from their own biases and their own experience, and something that is obvious and easy for one person to be able to wrap their minds around might be really challenging for another person to wrap their minds around. And even though the intention is really good, you know, everyone wants to help each other in this situation, the communication might be completely off because of the nature of how it's being communicated and received and who it's being communicated by, who it's being received by, their individual moods, all sorts of different factors.
Their history, you know, their own
history is,
buttons.
How present they are with their own buttons, their own triggers, that type of thing.
Right.
So I work with this all the time, and I'm sure anyone who's in a relationship with a partner or a spouse has experience with this, where you have to really get to know when your partner or spouse is open to communication and what type of communication they're open to in that moment. And the only way that you know is by failing a lot.
Yes.
Basically trying something and going, oh, wow, that really didn't work. However, I communicated that. And so so it's very common for people to then get defensive and go into an argument or a fight with each other over a missed communication. But all that was really happening is two different systems trying to communicate to each other that don't see necessarily eye to eye in that moment. And so we take for granted that the other person is not us. They're not going to get our world unless we first study them and how to actually deliver to them in a way in a timing that is effective.
That is amazing. And I think it's interesting why it's so difficult. You know, you think that the human body is such a complex organism and it's able to function and do everything it has to do so beautifully and so majestically. But then when it comes to interpersonal communication, no matter whether it's a mother or a daughter or a coworker or a friend or a husband or wife, there's always so much difficulty Why do you think that is? That it's like everybody needs a coach like you. There really isn't anybody who is just, you know, harmonizing along and everything's going great. And there's never a little blip. It's like, oops, I just pissed off my best friend.
Yeah, it happens all the time. Well, it's the why is just because we make a lot of assumptions. We make a lot of assumptions that we communicate really clearly. Mm-hmm. And that we understand that other person's world, we understand their perspective, mm-hmm. that we want the best for them, that we see the best thing for them, or whatever it is, we make a lot of assumptions in how we communicate. And then when we communicate with all of those assumptions ingrained in our communication and have a certain type of expectation that our communication is going to be received clearly based on how we want it to be received, and then it doesn't get received that way.
Yes.
Then it's very challenging, because then you have to look at all of the assumptions that you've made about yourself and them that have contributed to that communication not being received effectively. And it's really ultimately, it's not really about you and about them as much as it is about all the assumptions that are being made.
Yeah, I never really heard it said that way before about assumptions. I mean, I know that, you know, we are often judging each other, but that's a very interesting approach. So I can see that you would be very beneficial for couples, either premarital or marital, or, you know, people who just don't believe in marriage.
Pre-marriage, so, marriage, post-marriage.
Post-marriage. Now we're getting back together again, marriage. Second marriage to the same person. So you have sessions that are 60 and 90 minutes. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
So I would think with a couple, wouldn't it need to be more with a couple versus?
Generally, I do like to have 90-minute sessions for couples. I will do 60 minutes if that's needed, but a 90-minute session definitely opens up a lot more opportunity to go deeper.
It sounds like a wealth of benefit there, and I can't imagine anybody who could do it doing it. Because, you know, if you think about, you know, some people may go, oh, well, you know, a life coach or a personal development coach, you know, costs money and my insurance doesn't pay for it. But if you think about the money that you lose in downtime on your work, on, you know, divorce and selling your home, and you know, there's so much more financial hardships that occur.
Well, I think my coach said it best, and I see my coach all the time. I'm constantly training myself to be at my own next level of self-awareness with my own coach. And she said it best, I think, when she said, hey, you pay now or you pay later.
Exactly. That is very, very true. I love it. I love it. That's a great way, I think, to end our session as well. Sam, I think that this has been one of the most amazing conversations. And we didn't really get to talk about sex because we ran out of time. But I mean, you can imagine when you have a man who is deeply in tune with his own spirituality and his own sense of self, if you can get to that place, even the most athletic, sexually educated, you know, human beings on earth aren't going to be able to get to where you're able to get just using your mind. And I know that, and I will actually add, so we don't have to talk about it, I will add it in the show notes, the link to the interview that you did, that you really went into that in a lot of depth.
Great, thank you.
I was impressed that you actually made the couple jealous. It was so funny. I was like, and this is kind of cute. I was kind of giggling, thinking that he's making them jealous. He's like, they're like, gosh, this guy who's in a wheelchair is getting it on better than we are.
Thank you. Well, and we can also do another interview at another time specifically about that topic. I would love that.
What we can do is we can take questions, maybe, you know, more specifically from anybody who has questions.
Oh, that would be great.
We could do like a question and answer podcast and we can talk about it then. But are you difficult to get, Sam? I mean, is your schedule pretty booked now? Or?
Well, I'm busy, but I am still quite available when need be. And of course, for you, anytime, I'll figure it out.
Thank you. And what are your hours that you keep generally out in the California time?
It's all over the place.
So you go work at night, so if someone's on Eastern, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone who wants to get off work and maybe meet with you at 7 o'clock, that's fine, but...
I'm working on structuring a more regular schedule in terms of privates and so forth. But, you know, since I'm on the West Coast, I work with a lot of people on the East Coast during evening hours, and it's just late afternoon for me, so it's
that's
no big
deal. That's perfect, actually. Yeah. That's perfect for you. Well, tell your lovely wife, Megan, I said hello.
Thank you, Deborah.
How long have you two been married?
We've been married for 3.5 years. We've been together for 8.5 years.
Oh, my goodness. You waited a while, didn't you?
We sure did. We had to make sure we could handle each other.
Well, don't you think that people really should know after a year? How long do you think is the optimum time?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes no time is the optimum time. I've met couples who married right away and had extraordinary lives together. And I've met couples who waited a long time to be careful and then broke up soon after they got married. So it all depends on how much work you're willing to put into the marriage, not the time.
I love that answer because marriage is work. It's people who expect it just to be easy and it should be easy. That's false, right, Sam?
It's complete idiocy.
I like that even better. Don't be an idiot. That's not judgment.
No, it's complete. I mean, I understand where the romantic idea that is possible comes from. I mean, it's a very sort of Hollywood-esque kind of way of thinking. And there is a lot of beauty to a great romantic relationship. And a marriage is a lot of work. In fact,
I love it.
For me, marriage has been as much work, if not more, than my paralysis.
Interesting. Well, and the same thing people can say for child rearing. I mean,
sure.
Raising a child. I have two daughters.
Sure.
I know I just did an interview with a woman who had an adopted child. Mm-hmm. It can be as much work and it can be as, you know, difficult as the actual injury itself, if not more so.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Sam. I really appreciate it. And we look forward to speaking with you again with some questions. You can visit Sam at sam@zenwarriortraining.com. And we'll also have the show notes on pushliving.com. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Deborah.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is sponsored by Push Living Photos, because using disability images in your marketing will help you create a positive and inclusive brand. When you buy Push Living Photo stock images, you get great photos of real people, and you can feel good knowing that your purchase is helping to change lives. This is the only stock image library that not only pays their photographer royalties, but also pays their models with disabilities for each sale. For them, this could mean help with out-of-pocket medical expenses, wheelchairs, home modifications, adapted vehicles, and more. The benefits are as diverse as our models. Show the world you care about people living with disabilities. Visit our website to purchase stock photos, join our team of models, or register to become a photographer. PushLivingPhotos.com.